This next gentleman is more remarkable, and he's another Exazimib case that I think is worth sharing, because he actually received a BI week, twice a week schedule of monotherapy. But this was his background. Very nice man. He's actually British, but lives here. Basically, a very nice man. Had some interesting cytogenetic abnormalities at diagnosis. I did have 13 deletion by FISH, lots of bone disease. And what he basically had in terms of therapeutic opportunity was he got bortezomib and dex to start with, which he did unfortunately develop significant neuropathy. This was where he was treated at UMass Worcester, where he got aggressive combination chemotherapy with platinum as well as bortezomib. Unfortunately, he did very poorly with that regimen. He perforated his gut and actually was in the ICU and had to have a defunctioning colostomy.
What do you think the perforation was from?
Platinum etoposide, adriamycin. Yeah, it's very mucosally toxic as a combination. So he came through to transplantation in June, and amazingly enough, and very brave, but did it. And he did it with his defunctioning colostomy. And then he had that all re-anastomosed post-transplant. He went on to classic maintenance with lenalidomide, dexamethasone, and concurrent zoledronic acid. He really couldn't tolerate more melphalan, and thought might have been carfilzomib potentially. But at that time, he really was very sick. He was exhausted. He was burnt out. His docs in Worcester were thinking about a second transplant, and he said, absolutely not. I should mention that with his transplant, despite having the defunctioning colostomy, he was in hospital for 40 days. So it was a long haul. I apologize. His hospitalization was a little less than that, not 40 days. It was a good 30 days. So my point is, it wasn't a traditional transplant where you're in for 3 weeks, basically. It was a bit longer. Anyway, he went on to maintenance thereafter, and essentially then progressed on maintenance within a year. So he was enrolled in a single-agent exazimib study, and what was really interesting was that, in essence, he came through with a twice-a-week drug orally. And again, this is a guy who'd have been a sitting duck for GI toxicity, Neil, but he wasn't, interestingly enough. He started in 2010 on exazimib, 3 milligrams twice a week. He achieved a minimal response, well, over time, over 3 to 4 years, but did really well. He then went into PR January 2014. We've dose reduced him to optimized tolerance, and he's down at 2.3 twice a week, and he's in sustained PR.
What were the tolerance issues that caused you to dose reduce?
Just a little bit of skin rash, actually, and some arthralgia, some GI toxicity, but minimal. And then basically where we have ended up is, this is a quote from him, feeling great and looking forward to driving across the USA in a Land Rover with his wife, because he's British, you see, hence the Land Rover as opposed to a Jeep. but, you know, isn't that a lovely story? So there's sort of two examples of how these new approaches can make a difference. And these are take-home messages around exazimib. This would be my closing comments, that there's a continuing evolution of multiple myeloma treatment, selected new classes and targets, and we've got a wealth of exciting options ahead of us with the vaccines, merizumib, the third generation IMiDs, the CELMoDs that I talked about, obviously the promise of melflufen, the excitement around selinexor, the real excitement around venetoclax, and then the obvious other drugs, the checkpoint inhibitors and more. And I just include nelfinavir because that is not produced by any company now, unfortunately, but it's a protease inhibitor that may have an effect on MEK. And in combination with bortezomib, it's very active. I just give it as an interesting example. It's an old HIV drug.
Yeah, you're right, HIV drug, that's wild.
And it was combined with bortezomib by some very innovative thinking from our Swiss colleagues. And in a relapse refractory population, they were able to show great responses.